Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From the Webby Awards, I'm David Michelle Davies. This is the Webby Podcast.
Who says YouTube ain't cultured?
Just heart emojis.
Here's what I made earlier.
Hey, welcome back. My guest for today, Britt Morin, has always been ahead of the curve when it comes to evolutions in technology and the internet. She started her career in the early 2000s as a full-time employee at Apple, basically fulfilling the ultimate Silicon Valley dream from the get-go. She's since worked on tons of projects that have shaped the internet as we know it, things like iTunes, Google Maps, and more. After taking some time away from Silicon Valley to explore her other passion, DIY, she later launched Brit & Co. It's a media company that helps women tap into their creativity using DIY content, video tutorials, and classes. I spoke to Britt about the early stages of her career in Silicon Valley, gender bias in tech, and Britt & Co.'s mission to inspire women and girls to feel confident in their creations. Britt starts off telling me about her background and how she felt compelled to jump into Silicon Valley as a newly graduated 20-something after just 2 years of college.
When I was a teenager, you know, as I was getting online, and this is coming off of a period of me actually like tinkering around with things at home when my parents were working, I loved making stuff. I loved being creative. And then the internet hit, and I loved the internet and took computer science classes, learned to code, and desperately wanted to get to Silicon Valley as quickly as possible.
Wow. I would think that was sort of like a dream that not a lot of people in like San Antonio and Austin had at that time.
Yeah, especially like young women, I think. It was just around, you know, 99,000.
Okay.
.com bust was about to happen. I was starting to see these trends happen of like Amazon.com, you know, and what that could become, and the iPod was becoming a big deal, and
right.
The idea that music could go from device to device was really interesting to me. And so, yeah, I chose to go to UT Austin because I could get out of school and almost 2 years early.
Oh.
And I did that, and I moved out to Silicon Valley, and I actually ended up working for Apple and then Google straight away.
Wow. I mean, that's like that like sounds like a dream, right? It's like you were
all my friends thought I was crazy.
You graduated early.
They were like,
and you went
what
to
are you doing?
Apple.
Why aren't you like staying here partying? Like, this is the college life, best years of our lives. And in my perspective, I was in debt, like literally spending 20 to 30 grand a year of my parents couldn't afford to send me through college. So I was taking out loans. I wasn't able to get a full-time job, you know, paying me real money. And this whole thing was happening in Silicon Valley that I was missing out on. And I really wanted to take part of that. And I always knew I wanted to start a company, too. I actually started a couple companies in college that were hilarious. I don't even want to talk about them because they're so – actually, one of them was the precursor to Kickstarter, I'm just going to say. The name was pretty terrible. It's called – fund hole, like you would put the funds.
Right.
Again, you know, I was just obsessed with the idea that, you know, all of these things are about to happen in tech and I need to be part of it.
So your first job was at Apple?
Yeah,
what
I worked
at
iTunes
at
when it was just music.
Wow.
So literally programming the iTunes homepage, picking out singles of the week, which in retrospect, like, is hilarious. It's, you know, it was like 10 people sitting around a table like voting who should get it, and that artist then, like, their week was made, their career was made if they got the single of the week.
These days it's like a computer that chooses.
Yeah,
that,
now it's an algorithm, right? Yeah. It used to be humans and paper and pencils. And then Google, I actually started out working on Google Maps when MapQuest was still the number one mapping provider in the country. And
how did you get to start there?
I just applied to there, and I ended up in the product group. I was working in product marketing for a bit, ended up doing some product management work, and worked on maps and then search and then YouTube. And at YouTube, I was asked to launch a new product for Google called Google TV. And so this was a product where we would essentially be taking long-form video content, similar to like Apple TV, and putting it within an Android operating system, leveraging YouTube and Chrome and other types of Google properties. And it was dramatically surprising to me how these television networks work. You know, all these people we tried to meet with to give us their content basically told us no, or told us, I'm sorry, I can't. I'm locked up in these contracts, or I literally don't have engineers.
Right.
I don't even understand what this is. Like, no way video content on the internet is ever going to happen in long form. But meanwhile, on YouTube, you know, all of these YouTubers were making millions of dollars, serving millions of people, making videos for virtually no cost in their bedrooms.
Right.
And I saw that the delta between those two worlds, and I was like, wow, something big in media is about to happen, and I want to be part of that.
So tell me, before we get to there, tell me a little bit about working on maps, because that was like one of the, at least that I can, that was one of the first things that I can remember where suddenly like the amazingness of the web on your computer all of a sudden was like on your phone and was so useful. And it was, especially Google Maps was X multiplication times, whatever you want, more useful on your phone than anything else out there.
On your phone. You can't imagine Maps and not on your phone now. And it's so funny. It's almost like the product of Google that I think has made one of the biggest impacts on the world, but gets the least amount of cred. So thank you for asking about it. And I, like, former Google Maps self is really proud of it still. I mean, I was working on Maps when there wasn't even Google Maps for mobile. It was the team. You know, we were launching driving directions, and that was like an innovation. We launched Street View, and that was an innovation. And then I remember the meeting I sat in where the engineer who created Wi-Fi triangulation, you know, the little blue dot about where you were, showed up on your phone and in the Google Maps app, and the room was just like in awe that that could happen. You know, like, we are able to now track where everybody is in real time, even when they're not on a Wi-Fi signal. And that, I think, was one of the breakthrough moments.
When the arrow's pointing the direction that I'm walking, I'm still in awe, honestly. Like, when I turn 80 degrees and the arrow turns.
Well, now they're, like, street viewing all the national parks and things. And so it's like I live by a big national park, and I'm always on trails. And so I'm just like, I always get lost on the trails, which sometimes is good and sometimes really sucks. But it's like, oh, well, now with Street View on my maps, I can know where I'm going whenever I'm on a trail, which is just crazy to me, you know, that everything, including our national parks, are getting mapped.
Yeah. Did you get some sense of, like, I mean, because Street View on some level was also a function of, like, machines starting to play a bigger role in some of these,
like,
technologies,
self-driving
cars.
It always starts with humans, though, first, right? So it just takes – it's just a lead-up time, right? I'm very much pro-automated, vehicles and automated tasks that humans shouldn't waste their time doing. And actually, like, I think it's compelling that the one industry that can't be automated is creativity. Mm-hmm. And that kind of aligns to what we've really started building with Brit & Co. and one of the big opportunities I saw when I was starting the company.
Yeah, so it sounds like you had some insight that Google TV wasn't really going to work because all these executives were living in, like, the Stone Age, but YouTube was working. You saw all these people, independent people, young people making their own content, finding audiences. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of a
nugget? Yeah, there are a few trends at play, right? So, yes, traditional media, I would have bet would flounder for at least a good 5 to 10 years while they figured it out and got rid of some legacy revenue lines and print and, you know, all those things. Social media would continue to grow exponentially. And then, you know, I knew media was an opportunity, but I didn't know what I wanted to root it around. Like, why start a company? What's the mission? You know, I'm not one of those people who just starts a company to, like, make a lot of money. I really wanted to make an impact. And so I actually took 6 months off after I left Google just to figure out, like, what is it that I want to do every day when I don't have my day scheduled? And everyone, you know, always has that motto, like, live the life you love by never working a day in your life, whatever that thing is. Yeah. So I was like, well, what do I love? Yeah. And at that point in time, I had really been like a little burnt out on tech, in the sense that like I just couldn't stand to stare at a screen all day long, and I really want to do stuff with my hands. And it was kind of just a timing thing. This place called Tech Shop launched in San Francisco. It's like a gym for making things. So you pay $99 a month and you can come in anytime. And there's wood saws and there's laser cutters and there's sewing machines. And there's 3D printers.
Had you been using these type of things before?
No, but no. I was getting married and I decided to like go all in on like making my wedding my big like do-it-yourself moment and designing it all. And I was like, well, I can use all these machines. And like, it took me literally 30 minutes to learn how to use, you know, a laser cutter right. and a 3D printer, because literally it's downloading a file, sending it to print like you would a piece of paper, but out it pops on a piece of wood or a piece of plastic. And all of a sudden it's like something unlocks in your brain and you can now make anything you want to. Mm. And it was just fascinating to me because I was making home decor, I was making jewelry, I was making stuff for my wedding, and everyone sitting around me was a man, and they were all making like 3D printed Star Wars figurines and like weird like action figures. And
this
so,
is like, because it's sort of a time, this is like the time of like maker culture and like
yeah.
Make Magazine starting
magazine,
to, right? Yeah.
Kickstarter was just mm-hmm. launching, Indiegogo. Like, so it's sort of like I can fabricate anything I want to and sell it on the internet, direct to consumer, and make a business out of it. And I remember like the Dodo case, that iPad case
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
It was like this dude sitting next to me at the laser cutter, like, that became like a multi-million dollar business.
I still get those emails,
business.
That one Dodo case
I own many Dodo cases. But Pinterest launched like literally the month after, and all my girlfriends flocked to Pinterest. It was really a millennial female audience to start with, and they were all pinning creative stuff. So recipes, DIY projects, home decor. And these were not women that I thought of, you know, in the crafty sense, in the creative sense, and nor did they think of themselves in that way. They would all tell me like, oh, well, like, that's awesome. I wish I could figure out how to do that one day. And so I sort of started to realize like, oh my gosh, these women don't believe they're creative people. And when did that change? Because when we're like 5-year-old girls and you put paper dolls or Legos or anything in front of us, we all of a sudden just start making, start creating. Like, we have no inhibitions about ourselves. So when we're 25-year-old women or 30-year-old women, like, we all of a sudden are very insecure about our creativity. And I don't know what happens. After doing this for 6 years, I have a lot of strong hypotheses related to middle school. But I realized that this was an issue. Like, adult women just don't feel like they're creative people, and that needs to change. Mm. Because really, creativity is this sense of like empowerment inside yourself that really impacts everything you do. So yeah, it sounds silly to say like I feel insecure about the scrambled eggs I make in the morning and if they're good or not, and if I should like serve them to my friend or not. But really, like, that's in every part of your life, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, will you hypothesize a bit? Like, why do you
yeah.
think that is?
So honestly, it there's a lot of research that's gone into it. At the time of middle school, actually, even in sometimes elementary schools, like when you start to grade students on their artwork, as well as when kind of social pressure starts to ramp up
right.
among adolescents, you start to get teased if you're not good enough. You start to make bad grades on something where you might be just like using expressionism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of these artistic students and artistic people and creative people get, you know, scoffed at or criticized for a wild idea and a creative idea, and that begins to sort of snowball. And I think especially now with the impact of social media, it's a double-edged sword, because I actually believe that the one biggest trend happening right now in social media is the element of personalization and customization. Like, everyone wants something that's their own, that's unique, that they can share with their friends and brag about. You're seeing manufacturing capabilities change to enable you to actually make a red gingham shirt instead of a blue gingham shirt, and maybe put your name in it, and
yeah.
All these different things. And so it's funny, because in many ways people are designing and customizing and creating things without even knowing it, and that's what they're sharing the most on social media. However, the reason, you know, people actually get really scared to share on social media, especially the teenagers right now in this Gen Z population, because they might not get as many likes as normal, or
right.
someone might comment and say something negatively. And so they're all making finstas, like fake Instagrams, or they oftentimes put up images, and then if it doesn't get enough likes in a certain amount of time, they'll
right.
take it down. And so I actually believe that the impact that's having on people's ability to be creative and to be expressive is getting worse, not better. Mm.
I mean, anybody who's ever like tried to write anything from scratch or
right.
make their own photo essay or whatever the sort of creative endeavor is knows that you hit that moment where you're just like totally vulnerable and
yeah.
totally naked. And
right.
if you
it's not
don't
good enough, I shouldn't
yeah,
share
it's
I shouldn't
terrifying.
Take a photo of
yeah.
it. I shouldn't share it. It's not as good as my friend did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
That
I
sucks,
can imagine.
Right?
Yeah.
And that really evades itself into other elements of your personality, I think, as well.
Right. Yeah. I guess I relate to, even though I'm not somebody who's like putting up lots of my own artistic creations mm-hmm. on Instagram. I can imagine, though, maybe I can't imagine. If you're a kid, though, and you're like waiting for your 80 Instagram likes and you only get 40, it must be just crushing.
Yeah. And it's funny, too. I mean, just thinking about Instagram stories, like some people are really good at designing those and putting like polka dots on them and putting the like little icons in different places and making the text look cool. And it's almost, I mean, even for me, it's like, oh, maybe mine doesn't look as cool as that
yeah.
person, and the photo filters you use and everything. Like, it's all about a visual identity now. And the way that you express yourself, and if it's not at a certain level, then, you know, you're not good enough. And I just
yeah.
hate that. And
yeah.
I see it happening not just to millennials, but like I said, to Gen Z. And it feels like somebody and some brand needs to stand up for that. And
yeah.
and so Brit & Co, you know, that's a big, lofty
of course,
you know, goal.
But you have to have a big, lofty
but,
goal, right?
But that's, yeah. yeah, in many ways we're trying to attack that. And what we found is it just gets into like literally every aspect of lifestyle. All the way into like mental health, all the way into empowerment, and so we're trying to kind of stay in our lane, knowing that, you know, we've been able to branch out into all different kinds of topics over the last 6 years.
Right, because ultimately you can try and do tutorials and teach people how to do these crafts or do this
right.
project, or but if. If the confidence,
they don't even believe in themselves to start, right? And
all
actually,
the heady stuff is not there. So you're starting to do content around that type
of
stuff
top
as well.
Of the, yeah, I mean, and again, like most people don't consider themselves creative, and they might click into a recipe, but they don't believe they can make it, you know. And so we'll start by saying like something pop culture and more mainstream related. Did you know Taylor Swift threw this amazing 4th of July party? Here's the types of cocktails she served. And also, like, here's how you can make this. You know, so it's
right.
taking something that's kind of like pop culture, mainstream, and then driving people down the funnel into like, oh, that is interesting. Maybe I want to make that. And, oh, by the way, we have classes. If you don't even know the skill at all, like, take a cocktail making class, you know, mixology, or take whatever. And if you need the actual tools and products, you know, we can sell you that kind of stuff too. So that's sort of how we think about that funnel. And
mm-hmm.
we think about it in a very online and offline way.
Tell me about the offline way.
Yeah, we've since the start, literally from the first year, we've hosted all kinds of events, conferences, festivals, pop-up events. We've even done kind of an ambassador network across the country where women are hosting their own events. And we get these women together, and we just – well, at the conferences, obviously, we're trying to talk and get kind of like success stories out of these really amazing women. But for the festivals and for the other events, we're really trying to get women to come and touch and see. And part of it is about making things themselves and learning how easy it is. It's super fun. It's, you know, decorating a tote bag and, you know, putting their name in gold letters on something. And some of it is about supporting women who are creatives. And that's everyone from, you know, chefs and women who run food trucks to women who are artisans, like selling their own jewelry, to musicians and performers, and really trying to broaden what it means to think about creativity. Women who code, you know, I
yeah.
think have to be creative just as much as a woman who paints.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This feels like a good place to ask you because you are a CEO in Silicon Valley, and there's a lot of tumult around some of these like gender and non-gender issues these days.
Mm-hmm.
How are you seeing what's going on? Are you like, is it making you optimistic that people are finally starting to actually talk about this stuff? Mm-hmm. I'll just tell you from my perspective, to me, there's something really optimistic about the fact that the conversations are happening. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, when you actually hear the content of the conversations, it's like terrifying that this stuff has been going on, right?
Totally. I mean, I've been lucky that I've been in a pretty serious relationship, if not married, the entire time I've been running this company. And I've never had those types of issues. I will say that, of course, gender bias, especially unconscious bias, I believe happens. So there's like the sexual predator stuff, and then there's like the gender bias. You know, it's funny. My husband is a venture capitalist and former entrepreneur turned like seed investor. And so I see firsthand what those interactions are like and how, you know, the mindset of a venture capitalist and even, you know, the outcome of what these conversations have had in terms of how they've impacted these VC firms. And it's definitely made it like top of the radar. You know, everyone's thinking about it, talking about it. I think male venture capitalists more now than ever are very sensitive to meetings they're taking with women.
Right.
However, I actually feel like that can do a lot of damage to women because now, for instance, there are some firms who have a mandate that you can't meet a woman outside of the office.
Right. It's like the Mike Pence thing.
So like women are missing, women entrepreneurs are missing out on like casually grabbing a drink and talking about the deal, you know, and seeing each other at, I don't know, the Warriors game. And, you know, it's, you know, all these things that men to men, you know, male to male conversations
chilling,
might offer.
Really.
Yeah. And it sucks. And it also sucks that, like, they have to tiptoe around female entrepreneurs so much, too. It's like we can't just have a real conversation. So I'm glad it's happening, but I actually am concerned that it's swinging a little too far in the other direction right now.
Tell me about the makeup of Brit & Co.
Gender.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
70% female. I think average age is like 30.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been diversifying quite a bit lately. Half of my direct reports are men. 80% of our board are female. Very strong female employee base. And in many ways, of course, we have to have that to serve our audience
for sure.
Well.
So tell me a bit about like how the company's evolved.
Yeah. So we'll be 6 years old at the end of this year, depending on where you start, I guess. I bootstrapped it for about 6 months. We have grown pretty massively. So we started the company thinking about media and content first. We've been in that business, like I said, for about 6 years. We now reach across our site and key social networks, 130 million uniques distributed every month.
It's a lot of people.
They're mostly women. They're mostly millennial. I guess now that's Gen Z and millennial, 18 to 35. We bleed at the edges in both directions. After launching so much content, we got a lot of our audience who started asking us for the actual skills behind these tutorials and behind all this how-to content we were generating. So we launched a business of online classes. We now have about 100 courses online, and they are topics that range from coding to calligraphy to how to start a business. So very diverse sets of classes, all created by young women who are professionals in these topics.
Are you sort of a platform then for people?
We produce them all in-house, yeah. There's never been actually an education platform that's, you know, premium content that's been made for young women. I mean, there's a lot of user-generated platforms like Skillshare. There's like Lynda and, you know.
Yeah.
So we really thought about this audience and like the things that they want to learn and ran like things like iPad lettering are some of our top courses in the last month, you know, which is, it's just interesting. It's like not something you would find on a lot of these other education sites.
How do you keep up with knowing what to be teaching in
the content, the data that we see in our content. So in many ways, you know, we have some of the best data out there because we're producing hundreds of pieces of content every day. And we know the teachers and the audience, you know, that we should be serving. So it's that business has been going really well for us. And then in the last 6 months, we actually launched a new business, which is merchandising. And we had always kind of dabbled with e-commerce. Like I said, you know, when we were teaching a calligraphy class online, a lot of people were like, where do I get calligraphy materials? And so we would just sell calligraphy kits. And that actually was is a pretty decent business for us. And then we got a lot of interest from mainstream retailers, and Target approached us, and we decided to launch a big collection with them in the spring, and we've ended up launching a couple other collections with them in the last few months. And so now, you know, we are really starting to learn more about the retail landscape and putting products out into the market, as well as putting content out in the market, and how the two of them kind of pair well together.
So this is stuff that you actually like make originally
and then it's,
as opposed to just like selling stuff of
Yeah, and
what
it
kind
all
of
supports,
stuff do you sell?
So we've done three lines so far. One has been kind of a party and entertaining line, plates, cups, all kinds of things. We do a lot of entertaining content at Brit & Co. We've done a do-it-yourself kit line. So the calligraphy kit is an example. Also things like, you know, how to make a necklace type of kit, how to make, you know, a tote bag, how to knit a scarf, all of that kind of stuff. We've also done a back-to-school kind of office desk accessory kit, so a bunch of notebooks and planners and all kinds of accessories for the workspace or for your school space. And we're working on a lot more stuff that'll be coming out in the next year or so. So we're excited about that.
I think there's been a lot made in the world of, like, the media business is, like, changing every – I mean, it's changed since you walked in here, probably, right?
Totally.
How do you see this part of what you're doing? Is it a diversification? Is it giving? I mean, do you ultimately see this being? Do you know yet? I guess would be my question. Where it's going, or is it?
I mean, obviously, no one knows where it's going. I have thoughts, but in my very first seed pitch deck to our primary venture capitalist, I actually outlined this vision from the start. I was really inspired when I got started by the Martha Stewart business strategy and the Walt Disney business strategy, which was create great content and then sort of branch off of that into other revenue lines, right? And if you do that well, and if you build kind of the characters well, then, you know, that actually those businesses can be pretty large scale businesses. And so it's always been part of the strategy. I don't think one will ever, you know, totally catapult the other. I would actually strive to have very balanced revenue streams. I think the fact that the media industry is totally crazy right now is just like a happening I didn't even anticipate when I started this company.
Yeah.
It's like equally awesome and equally challenging. But I think the fact that we have such a diversified business and we've been planning that business for many years has put us into a great position of strength, because you're noticing that a lot of other digital media publishers are really trying to pivot into merchandising or pivot into events or pivot into memberships, whereas we've sort of structured the company from the start to be who we are now. And actually, we put up a lot of guardrails around the type of content we publish so that our audience, you know, knows what we stand for and knows that if we make a product to sell physically, it's going to stand for a certain topical area. It's going to stand for creativity, empowerment. It's going to stand for, like, quality. We've never been, you know, about creating a content farm. You know, we've always wanted to have high quality. So that's all been, you know, very strategic since the beginning of the business.
One of the things that struck me, I was looking at the value you guys have on your website. You have, like, the values of Brit & Co. And I guess I was going to say one of the things that surprised me, but then once I read it, it wasn't really surprising. But I think you had color listed as a value, right?
Is that weird to have color as a value?
Well, I mean, I guess it's not really weird. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
The thing that struck me about it is your site, and I would just say generally, like, all the materials I've ever seen are just, like, visually stunning, right? It's like, it feels, like, so visually, it's really, really beautiful. not that non-visually it's not beautiful, but it's really visually beautiful. Especially as a challenge because you're dealing with, on some level, like making things, which there's often a lot of like rough edges and things that are unmade don't often look that great. But you've done a great job of like really making it look super, super appealing. And then I saw that the color was a value, and I was sort of wondering, is that like, do those things tie together, or is it meaning something entirely different?
I mean, it's, I just imagined my childhood when I was starting Brit & Co. and that, you know, those moments of creativity, and you think about crayons, and you think about like those art kits you used to get, and you think about, I never, you know, I always wanted to use all the colors of paints and everything, and that's, it's messy, it's fun, it's colorful, it's playful, and we really wanted to like foster that vibe into Brit & Co. And so color has always been a value of ours, and I think it just lends itself to expression, right? And if I love, you know, these people, there's this woman I saw walking down the street like a year ago who was probably 90, not joking, I'm surprised she could even walk, and just like neon patterns everywhere all over her, like everything didn't match at all, and I was just like, I want to be that woman when I'm 90. Like
she didn't care, give
a crap about what anyone thinks of her, and she's just rocking her neon patterns, and like that's awesome, and that's like, that is the mentality I want every person to have and every woman to have, and just like, you do you, you know, like do whatever you want and rock it.
Give me like a little bit of Brit advice. Like, how do you get the 100 people on the same train every day, going the same direction, trying to do the same thing?
It's a good question. Someone forewarned me when I was starting the company that the hardest period of growth is between 50 and 150 employees. And there's a lot of actual like neuroscience that goes into that in terms of how many nodes your brain can comprehend at one time, et cetera, et cetera. But it is. It's certainly been challenging, I think, mostly just from communication standpoint. You know, I can't literally talk to everybody in the company one-on-one as efficiently as I used to. And so the best thing we've learned how to do is to hire great leaders underneath me who absolutely understand the communication, the message, and then can sort of, you know, regurgitate that to their teams. We've also had to design all kinds of processes, you know, like monthly lunches that are just open form Q&As with me and some of our all hands communications and things like that. It's really all about communication, honestly. I think, you know, the fact that you're growing teams and reorganizing the business, you know, is just a nature of like the industry plus growing, and that's fine. But the hardest challenge is just communication. And that's literally, you know, it's something that I'm trying to focus on every day, just getting more clear, more clear, more clear. Because you say one thing to 10 people and all 10 of them might think that, interpret that different ways.
Do you feel like a special responsibility as a company that's trying to empower young women to be more creative and feel more confident about it? When these sort of like big polemics around gender in the workplace come up, to have like a really proactive stance with your own, within your own company on that stuff? Do you feel like you need to like have a voice on it all the time, or?
Yeah, it's funny, like we have self-organized into, we have something called the Diversity Committee, and actually it randomly stemmed more out of the election than it did any sort of gender or ethnic diversity topic that's come up in the last year, which many have come up. But it was the idea that, you know, we should make sure that we are representing all viewpoints, all ages, all sizes, all genders, all political beliefs, you know, and so they meet, you know, every month and review all of our content, what we've done great at, what we've not done great at. They review internally, like how we should be talking and treating one another as employees who are diverse in all different ways. And so that's been amazing. And I think every company should have like a diversity committee of some sort. And then separately, just like preaching to the choir and eating our own dog food or whatever mantra you want to follow, like, creativity has always been the heart and soul and the core of Brit & Co. And so we actually give all of our employees a day off once a quarter, and we call it Creativity Day, and they get $50 each. They can't come to the office. They have to actually go learn or do something creative with their day.
On the same day?
All on the same day. And the only rule is you have to report back at 4 p.m. and sort of show and tell the thing that you did and the thing you made. And so it gets gets ourselves into this vulnerable position of like, I took this like water painting class and I thought I was going to be good at it, but it turned out like this. I'm not sure about it, but like, it's that's okay. We're all in this together, you know? And I think it's little things like that that really encourage everybody to get vulnerable with one another, but also to, like, sort of really practice what we preach.
Britt Moran, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much to Britt Moran for sitting down and chatting with us. If you want to learn more about Britt & Co., head over to their website, britt.co, and maybe dive into their e-classes on everything from illustration to starting a business. Our producer is Sebastian Adey. Our editorial director is Nicole Ferraro. Research and writing by Jordana Jarrett. Music is Poddington Bear. Claire Graves is a bag of terror chips on an overnight flight. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.